Hello, hello. Welcome everyone to a very special episode of Benzinga Cannabis Insider. We are joined today by Tarek Brooks. He's the president of Combs Enterprises. And we're going to be talking about cannabis today. What a surprise. Unexpected turn of events. Tarek, how are you doing today? And thank you for joining us, of course.
I'm doing great, Javier. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the recent development, you know, and how Combs Enterprises, of course, this is Diddy's holding company, and of course yours as well. How are you getting into the cannabis space? What was today's move about?
Well, yeah, today's an historic day. So Combs Enterprises is the collection of businesses and investments that are owned by Sean Diddy Combs. We have a number of different consumer-facing businesses across several industries, including spirits, media, music, fashion, consumer goods, and more. And today's announcement is historic in that this is one of the rare opportunities in really American history where you have an African-American entrepreneur with the platform and reach that Sean Combs has that will have the ability to enter a new industry during its very early formative stages and be able to advocate for his community by doing so. So today, our announcement was that through a deal with Cresco Labs and Columbia Care, we are purchasing assets in New York, Massachusetts, and Illinois to create the largest Black-owned cannabis company in the world.
And that is super exciting, right? You were just telling me that this was your main motivation, right? To help advance minorities in cannabis, to help undo the harm that the war on drugs did on our communities, right? And even Diddy said, my mission has always been to create opportunities for Black entrepreneurs in industries where we've been traditionally denied access, right?
So absolutely. How
did this mission create opportunities for Black entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. For us, the purpose is much bigger than the moment. And when we look at the history of cannabis, despite, you know, people of all races basically using cannabis at about the same rates, African Americans have been disproportionately over-policed, disproportionately over-criminalized. In fact, we're arrested at four times the rate of other citizens. And then when you look at the development of cannabis as a thriving, fast-growing legal industry in the U.S., African American companies make up 2% of the companies in the cannabis space. And that's just not right. That's just not fair. And so we take it as our responsibility and Puff as a fighter for economic empowerment in our community. It's our responsibility to establish a successful, thriving business in the industry that produces top quality products and hires executives and experts from all kinds of diverse backgrounds. But then we also take the responsibility to help build and create the ecosystem around our businesses and ensure those ecosystems also have diverse participants so that everyone has a chance to compete. I mean, I think when you look at what's really core to Sean Combs is that he wants people of all backgrounds to have the same 24 hours, to have the same level playing field and be able to compete to be as great as they can be. And we intend to do that in the cannabis space.
That is fantastic. Are there any initiatives that you're thinking about in relation maybe to helping formerly incarcerated or currently incarcerated people or helping communities of color in other ways beyond, of course, doing business with them and hiring them?
Well, I mean, we really think about it in three ways. First, we're going to advocate. You know, we will use our position and our platform to be able to have conversations with regulators and lawmakers to help ensure that they are developing reasonable, manageable frameworks to be able to do business and participate in the cannabis industry in their respective states and even at the federal level when that time comes. We want to make sure that the kind of laws and rules that are created are ones that account for what the reality is for minority business people and not just what it should be, and to make sure that we don't have kind of booby traps or places where minority entrepreneurs can stumble and then have the opportunity taken away from them. The second piece is to empower. And that starts with our openness and willingness to hire formerly incarcerated people to help them get their lives back together, to help them rejoin society productively, and extends to offering kind of tools and programming to help, you know, social equity applicants get into the industry and get their footing in a safe and responsible way. And then the last piece is to really mentor and accelerate, right? So when you look at any successful entrepreneur from any background, one of the key drivers of success is the ability to find mentors that care about your success and to be able to get access to the tools, the technical assistance to help you accelerate your growth. And so we will build all of that into the core ethos of the company that we are building in cannabis.
Yeah, Tarek, and man, I really appreciate this, right? For me, you know, many times people often don't tell you, right, that you can start your own business, that you can thrive as an entrepreneur, right? Well, that is very, very American. You know, it's part of the American ethos in many ways. Right. It seems to not apply to many minorities, right? Where it's
Javier, it's not exactly true, right? If you look at the fastest growing population of entrepreneurs in the United States right now, it's African American women. You know, these women are entrepreneurial, they're creative, they're disruptive, but the real challenge is the lack of access to capital. And you see these stats in the VC space and other spaces where the proportion of capital that they have access to relative to the businesses they're starting is way out of whack. And in cannabis, this is even more so because on top of the barriers to capital that exist in the main market, the confusion and the complexity around cannabis and the tax laws and the state laws and what's happening at the federal level make it even more difficult for these entrepreneurs to get access to the capital and the resources they need. And so that's where we come into play, right? Like with our platform, with our scale, we should be able to impact things and change things in a way that enables that capital to flow more freely to the great entrepreneurs with the disruptive ideas that are going to change the industry in the future.
I'm blown away by that that stat about entrepreneurship. I was not aware.
Look, I mean, part of what you see in our country is a huge racial wealth gap that's been widely reported, well documented. And what you find is more and more of the folks in our community are understanding and appreciating the fact that we are going to have to do it ourselves. We are going to have to build and create and design our way out of this problem. And entrepreneurship is an amazing vehicle to do that because for a lot of these entrepreneurs, they are the service providers and job providers in their respective communities. And if they don't do it, no one else will. And so you have throughout our communities across the country, a growing wave of entrepreneurship. And you're starting to see a wave of folks that have had access becoming the intermediaries for pools of capital to our community. You have great minority venture capital funds that are coming to help solve the problem from their perspective too, but it's going to take a collective effort from a number of different angles because of the magnitude of the problem.
Totally, but it is so true, right? Back in 2017, I was writing a book on how to start a cannabis business, start your own cannabis business. I spoke to 100 people. About 80 of these entrepreneurs told me, you know, I just raised a little bit of money from friends and family, you know, just $1 million. I would always go like, who are your friends and family who have $1 million just laying around to support you? Like, you're so fortunate, but can I get an introduction as well, right? Yeah. And now we're starting to see that change where you don't only need to rely on your direct connections and there's other ways to pursue these.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is a lot of folks don't understand the magnitude of the problem. And so it's very easy for folks to underestimate the barriers that exist, right? You know, part of the reason why, you know, today 85% of the cannabis industry is controlled by white men is because those are the folks with the easiest paths to capital in a lot of situations. And then you look at our community, you don't really have those opportunities to leverage friends and family to the same extent. I mean, I'll give you a quick fact and a little bit of history here. So in 1863, African-Americans, and this was pre the ending of slavery, African-Americans controlled 0.5% of the wealth in the country. That's in 1863, pre the abolition of slavery. Today, the data as recently as 2019, and as you know, the pandemic probably made these stats worse. In 2019, African-Americans controlled 1.5% of the wealth of the country. So if you let that sink in, it helps you to understand why when you talk about, you know, you look at someone who's been able to raise capital from friends and family and kind of existing built-in networks, you know, in our community, they don't exist. We are a lot, in a lot of cases, the pioneers doing this for the first time, working out from under a huge head start that other communities have had. And so that's why it's so important when you think about an industry like cannabis that is just in its early stages and that still has tons of rapid growth in front of us, we have to be in position to be able to create wealth for our communities through the development of this industry. And that's why this is so important to us and why today is such a historic day.
You're a wealth of knowledge, Tariq. this is fantastic. Now, you know, Mr. Combs said he had been considering an investment in the cannabis industry for several years. Why did you decide to act on it now?
So we always, as we think about new industries, spend a lot of time doing research, trying to understand the drivers and the trends in industry. I think one of the things that Sean Combs is uniquely gifted at is being able to spot inflection points in an industry. I think cannabis is at a very important inflection point from the regulatory level. We're now at a point where we almost have 50% of the U.S. states legalizing some form of cannabis. You also are at a point where as the industry develops, brands are becoming more and more important. But again, I go back to that initial point that I made, like, the purpose is much bigger in the moment. So the thing that really drove Mr. Combs to give me the green light to push hard was when he saw that only 2% of the businesses in cannabis were owned by Black people. That was when he said, you know what, we have to jump in and we have to jump in now. And so there are a lot of macro factors that make now a very attractive time to get into the space. But that's really the driver when you get to the essence of why we would do this right now.
I love that. Now, you know, let's talk a little bit about the markets that you chose for this, right? Why New York? Why Illinois? Why Massachusetts? Why do you find these markets attractive?
Yep. So there's two ways to think about this. There's, you kind of call it the market dynamics, and then you think about us as an entity. From a market dynamic perspective, New York is going to grow to be, you know, one of the most important cannabis markets in the world, right? It's in its early stage. The regulations are still being kind of rolled out. But when it fully develops, it's going to be a huge, very, very attractive market. And, you know, part of what, you know, attracts us as well is the fact that, you know, Sean is originally from New York. He's born in Harlem. He built Bad Boy Records, his first business in New York. We operate schools in New York. You know, when Diddy ran the city, he did it for New York public schools. So we have a long, deep heritage in New York. It's in our DNA. Illinois and Massachusetts are also two rapidly developing, maturing, very attractive cannabis markets where the regulatory framework is a bit more established in New York. So you kind of know what you're getting. You see a path on where it's going. So that makes them very attractive. Now, if you look, if you start with us as an entity first, because our platform is so broad, we have the ability to look at how our businesses and our brands show up in many different markets. And we can do that in spirits, we can do it in music, we can do it in Mr. Combs Social, we can do it. And so when you think about that, then you look at these particular states, there are markets in these states where our brands do extremely well, you know, New York City, Boston, Chicago, so on and so forth. And so for us, these three states are a perfect platform to build our cannabis empire from.
You know, you were talking about brands a little bit earlier, and I think I can assume what the answer is, but you just read, like, a couple of questions ago, you surprised me with an answer. So, and also, you know what they say about assuming, I just don't want to curse on this show. But, you know, are you planning to leverage Diddy's popularity, celebrity, to build cannabis brands around this or not? Or what are the plans in terms of brand development here?
Well, he has proven throughout his career to be one of the most prolific brand builders ever, right? He has a unique talent at being able to understand where culture is going and create brands that speak directly to, you know, the psychographic and demographic that kind of supports and understands them. So we will absolutely leverage that expertise. And I think that the piece that I think people underestimate is our ability to layer on top of that the data and insights we get from having such a broad platform, right? So we can understand how people think about cannabis from the information we get from Revolt, our media platform. We can understand how people think about cannabis from the insights we get from our spirits business. All of that is relevant when it comes time to, you know, sit in the room with the whiteboard and figure out how the brand should show up and where it should be positioned and how it should be priced. And so these are like the additional insights and competitive advantages that we feel like we bring that other folks just don't have that will eventually help us be, you know, as competitive as any company in the cannabis space.
Are you considering other investments in the cannabis space from Combs Enterprises?
Well, look, I mean, so we don't want to put the cart before the horse, right? Like this is a big transaction. And as you know, in this space, there is a relatively lengthy regulatory process that we have to go through before it closes. And then we go into that kind of day one, taking over this platform, making sure we understand our investing properly in what we have before we think about other opportunities. But that said, we are always opportunistic and looking for opportunities. You know, we fully believe that we will grow this three state perimeter to something much larger through time. And we're going to do that by very efficiently looking at market opportunities and investing and allocating capital in a way that makes a lot of sense. So from that perspective, we are always open to look and explore opportunities. But for right now, the focus is closing this deal and building this business in a healthy way.
Benzinga's audience is made up largely of retail and institutional investors. So I have kind of a technical question, right? Since you serve on Cresco's board of directors and are also the president of Combs Enterprises, you chose to recuse yourself from Cresco's review and approval of the transaction. Can you explain why this was necessary why you consider this to be the ethical decision?
Absolutely. One of the things I want to say is I have the highest regard for Cresco's board and executive leadership. It's an amazing team, and I've thoroughly enjoyed being a board member. When this opportunity came up, I thought Combs was uniquely suited to be able to take advantage of it. But what I wanted to make sure was that there was never any possibility of people thinking there was information that was moving in ways that it shouldn't, because I wouldn't want to jeopardize Cresco, Combs, or myself personally, right? So the easiest way to do that was to recuse myself from the board seat while we went through this process, so that everything was competitively the same as anybody else competing in this process, so that we can get it done in a way that is above question. And so that's kind of how we manage the process.
How do you see federal legalization? What is the likeliness of it happening in the next couple of years, say, or during this administration, in your view?
Well, I think anything involving the federal government is a process that's going to involve some important steps along the way. As we get deeper into the conversation around federal legalization, from the vantage point of having this business, we'll certainly have a better perspective. But what I can tell you is, I think there is some momentum that is building at the federal level. You've seen recent statements by Joe Biden and by Senator Schumer. We believe that one of the most important things that needs to happen is, shape the changes around how banks can engage with the industry. That's particularly important to minority entrepreneurs because the access to capital problem is already significant. We believe that the classification issue is something that has to be resolved. There's no reason why marijuana should be classified at a level more extreme than fentanyl. It just does not make sense. And so those things need to happen. But we also understand that those things take time. So when we built our business plan and business model for this business, we assume over the next few years, things don't happen because we want to be conservative. But we obviously want to join forces with those great folks in the cannabis industry who are pushing the charge so that we can help make the change that happens happen as quickly as it can.
I mean, this is a long game for sure, and you seem to be prepared to endure the fight. What's next for Combs Enterprises beyond cannabis? Anything you can tell us?
Yeah, well, listen, Combs Enterprises is a dynamic organization. Like I said, it's a collection of really disruptive companies and brands. We're excited that, in the next few weeks or so, we are going to launch a platform that we've been building with Salesforce called Empower Global. And it's really a way to reimagine the way that African-American businesses participate in e-commerce. And so different from a lot of platforms that have developed directories that enable people to find Black businesses, we actually are going to enable people to transact directly on our platform in a seamless, beautiful way. The team has an amazing group of leaders. It's led by a phenomenal CEO. Her name is Khadija Robinson. That platform is going to be launching soon. We're super excited about that. And I guess the next thing I would say is Puff is continuing his foray back into music. He released his first music in over 7 years earlier this spring, a song called Gotta Move On. It's doing phenomenally well on the charts. We're going to continue to build out our newest music platform, Love Records. And so, you know, really exciting developments to come from that side of the business too. So, and then look, I can go on and on. We have a really dynamic platform that is doing amazing things. And so you should expect to continue to hear about, you know, exciting developments from Combs Enterprises.
I mean, you're clearly staying busy. I'm sure that we'll hear all about it on Benzinga. Any concluding thoughts? You know, let's go back to cannabis for a second. Any concluding thoughts around the transaction, the future of the cannabis industry, what you expect to accomplish here?
Yeah, so what I would say is I would challenge all of the stakeholders in cannabis, and that's everybody from the operators to the suppliers to the investors to the regulators to the lawmakers to the consumers, to really stop and take a look at the cannabis industry that exists today and, you know, just do an assessment of fairness and how things are, right? And again, when industries are developing early, there will naturally be some volatility in how they develop. But in this particular case, the development of this industry should really purposefully right the historic wrongs that have happened to certain communities, particularly Black and brown communities. And I think that is going to be and should be fundamental to the development of this industry. And I think every one of the stakeholders in the industry has a role to play. And we are excited to partner with anybody who wants to be on that journey with us.
Amen. Love that. Tarek Brooks is the president of Combs Enterprises. Thank you so much for joining us on Benzinga Cannabis Insider. And we'll make sure to catch up again very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.